It's not only lengthened what some of it was back in this day. Now, the number of our days I will fulfill, Exodus 23 and 26. That the reference here is no obscure allusion to a future life in heaven is made clear by Deuteronomy 5, 16, which specifies that the prolonged days were in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, on the border of which Israel was then standing. All right. So now we notice the physical benefits bestowed supernaturally, and that's the division under the physical aspects of the kingdom. Now we come to the B, physical aspects through the divinely ordained human means. So it seems to be God's way in bestowing his gifts in the form of physical benefits, no, to require some effort on the part of man. Even in the case of manna from heaven, that was a miracle, but what did they have to do with it?
Had to gather it up.
All right, and we were noting the other day, I believe one day this week, about believing that which could be gleaned in the field, but those who needed it had to go and glean it. All right. Now, in other matters, such as protection from disease, much greater responsibility was laid upon the human recipient. All right. For example, in maintaining the productivity of the land, which God promised, the people must be careful to be quiet. All right. Conserve those natural resources. Take care of what you've got. When it might become necessary to lay siege to a city and trees were needed to supply the means of forcing an entrance through the gates or wall, they were permitted to cut down trees, but not any tree that was what? All right. No. The very opposite. Deuteronomy 20:19-20. And when hunting the fowl, the young only should be taken or could be taken. And the mother must always be spared. Deuteronomy 22:6-7. All right. Now the law of the Sabbath year, we've already noticed, required that the land lie fallow for 1 year out of every seven, in order to gain fresh strength and ensure its future fertility. All right, let's notice something about rest and relaxation. All right, as a matter of public health, there is a factor of rest and relaxation. Now, on this point, the provisions of the Mosaic Law are impressive. Under this code, the people were not only to rest when?
And year. They would rest 1 day out of the week and 1 year out of the seven.
All right. That's right. And 1 year every 7 years, Leviticus 23 and 25. All right. In addition to these regular periods of rest, there were also the special Sabbaths, appointed feasts and convocations, all making some contribution towards a beneficial release from the ordinary tensions of human existence. So this may help to explain in part why Moses, living under such a system, although not yet fully enforced, was able to bear the incredible burden incident to his mediatorial leadership and yet die at what age? 120 years, with no dimness of sight nor diminishing of his physical power. Deuteronomy 34:7. And it may also help to explain the remarkable vigor of the Jewish nation, even though the laws of rest were never perfectly observed. That these laws were kept in some measure, however, is evidenced by the rather petulant complaint of the Roman practice against the Jews, For the seventh day they are said to have prescribed rest, because this day ended their labor. Then in addition, they also spend the seventh year in what?
Labor.
Don't you see? All right, now, it's a fact that we as human beings need some rest, creation. Now I say recreation, not recipe. And that's what a lot of them do. What they call recreation is wrecking themselves and everybody else. All right, so according to the Mosaic law, these periods of rest were not intended to be spent in complete idle, but at least in part they were to be used for purposes of educational instruction. Now, change your job or, you know, do something else to kind of get out from under the constant burden of things. All right? Now, I have a note up here at the top of the page. Oh, how people are perishing today, spiritually, mentally, and physically, because of the lack of knowledge. The lack of knowledge. My people perish. Why?
Because of lack of knowledge.
Lack of knowledge. And so here the best modern medical authorities agree, not only as to the importance of rest and the maintenance of physical health, but also that ordinary such rest is better attained by a change of activity rather than by complete idleness. All right, now that's definitely true.
So you tell that to the owners of some business where it's an assembly line operation.
Yeah.
They can't understand why you can't just become a part of that machine and just click away like it does.
Right. Okay, now we pass to something else. And that was the laws of sanitation. The laws of sanitation. And this definitely is a factor in prevention and control of disease. These have been lauded as the rules of the highest sagacity by writers in the field of the history of medicine. All right, now this is taken from a note from L.T. Townsend, The Bible and the 19th Century. I'd like to, pages 41, 43, I'd like to see that, but that was in 1889, that book was published. All right. Now, in certain cases where the priest attended to the burning, he must do what?
Take it outside of the camp.
Well, that's true, but what should he do?
Wash his clothes.
All right.
Wash before returning.
All right. Wash his clothes and bathe his flesh. You see, that could be contaminated somewhat, you see. All right. And when the armies of Israel went to the battle, the strict provisions for latrine disposal compared favorably with the specifications of modern military forces engaged in action.
Even when you had you got these battles in Jellicoe
in the 14th, we have a footnote here on that bottom page. Referring to this remarkable passage, the late Dr. A. Randall Short, noted English professor of surgery, writes, "Waterborne and flyborne diseases, such as dysentery and enteric fever," now I don't know what that is, "have been the scourges of armies in the field even more than of stationary populations. In the South African War, the loss of life from these diseases was greater than from wounds. It was not the Great War of 1914-18 that it was not until the Great War of 1914-18 that effectual precautions were put into practice. Yet all through the centuries, the remedy was ready at hand. If the generals had trouble to read their Bibles and to observe the direction given, for the disposal of its sick straw by
excretion,
by burial. All right. Now, when the armies returned from battle, every participant was excluded from the camp for a period of 7 days, during which his body and clothing were to be purified, and any metallic spoil taken had to pass through the fire. Cleansing. Number 31:19-24. Furthermore, the command regarding cleanliness of flesh and clothing, so numerous as to become almost tiresome in reading, are suggestive of the meticulous procedures taken by the most modern hospitals and medical authorities. As to the eating of flesh, the Lord required the eating of certain offerings on the day they were specified. In other offerings, the meat could be eaten on the second day, but any left until the third day, what he had to do to it? Destroy, don't you say? All right. It was abominable. Leviticus 7:15-18, and then chapter 19 and verses 5-7. So entirely aside from the religious significance of such provisions, they were of great value in a climate where meat quickly reached a state of putrefaction. Now we come to another thing there, and that's about leprosy. There were certain laws, and I know I've read that and thought, why in the name of sense were some of these given? But there is a reason behind every one of the laws, these laws of sanitation and these dietary laws. What happens usually when a person first is diagnosed with high blood pressure? What do they tell them to get off? And usually pork. Get off pork. All right. Now, I've known the time when people eating pork under certain conditions, boy, they had diarrhea like nobody did. Isn't there some kind of a parasite that's in the flesh of pork that unless it's cooked a certain way and so on?
Trichinosis is a disease that anyway, it's a little parasite.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, the laws concerning leprosy are of interest in this connection, for it was a disease epidemic from the earliest historical times in the Delta and Valley of the Nile. Levitical code gave definite instruction regarding the identification of the disease. And by the way, what was leprosy a type of?
Sin.
All right. We have a note here, 16, probably not exactly the Hansen's disease of modern times, what he knows. And what was to be done with the leper? But no remedy was given for the cure of the disease. Leviticus 13:14.
This is only within the last 50 years or probably 30 since World War II, they actually began to come up with a chemical that would to do something about it.
Incidentally,
in fact, they have closed down, I can't say the Hawaiian words, on the island of Molokai at one end in an isolated area. There was a camp that was used, leper colony that was used for so many years that Father Damien, who finally died of leprosy himself, that he ministered to those people over there. But the few that they have left are in civilian hospital out of what they call the Great Salt Lake, or not the Great, in Salt Lake. It's way out from Honolulu, out beyond Pearl Harbor, or no, inland, up a higher above Pearl Harbor. There's a big hospital up there. There's a few that are left.
Yeah.
But they finally closed the place on Molokai, closed the clear down.
I was noticing yesterday's paper that they have found a drug that counteracts this condition. You know, when you're going to South America or Central America, so on.
Oh, Montezuma's Revenge?
Well, it's that intestinal thing that
yeah.
they have. And they got a drug that builds up resistance to it and take it so long, so on. And incidentally, they said it was the main ingredient of Pepto-Bismol.
Hmm.
And we usually keep some Pepto-Bismol all the time. And if you have something, some kind of diarrhea or something, take some of that. Okay. The leprous person was excluded from the camp. His appearance must be such as to make him easily identifiable. And he was required to warn others to keep away from him, from contact with him. 13, chapter Leviticus 13, verse 45-46. So in short, the problem was handled by a simple plan of segregation, a procedure not generally followed by other ancients, and it says compare 2 Kings 5:1, but which is still regarded as a very effective precaution against the spread of an infectious disease, which at one time became the greatest disease of medieval Christendom. And this is taken from an article on leprosy in the Encyclopedia Britannica, 14th edition, printed in 1929. It's from volume 8, page 97. All right. So now the question may be raised here as to why such a dreadful disease as leprosy should have existed at all among the people of the historical kingdom, if, as we have noted above, Jehovah had promised to take away all their diseases. The answer has been given in the Word of God and will be discussed under the following head. And so this is where we come to the moral aspect. And I think what we're going to find right here is that this finding out that we have what is known as psychosomatic diseases today is not anything new after all. That just means certain diseases that affect the body that actually were brought about through a mental condition. All right. The moral, so we come to number 6, the moral aspect of the historical kingdom. Thou shalt do that which is right and good in whose sight?
Inside of the Lord.
Inside of the Lord. Inside of the Lord. Oh, what's the prevailing thought today publicly about?
If it feels good,
do it.
Yeah.
Everybody. It don't hurt no one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. One of these towns around here has a rule of interpretation. A rule of conduct, you know.
Yeah.
And it sounds good to the average person, but it leaves a bunch of loopholes in it.
That's morally right.
Uh-huh.
In the sight of the Lord.
All right. That's right. So now the evidence for moral element contained in the law code of the kingdom is so generally acknowledged and indisputable that it requires no special argument. Now, the very heart of the Sinaitic law appears in the Ten Commandments, and at least 6 of these are concerned with basic principles of morality. It is true that we now have some archaeological testimony showing that some of the Mosaic statutes were not altogether unknown to the conscience of enlightened men even prior to the establishment of the theocratic kingdom at Mount Sinai. Such knowledge may have been derived from primeval revelation, Romans 1:19, and also from that divine law written in the hearts of men by original creation, spoken of in Romans 2:15. So the incorporation of the material of this kind in the Mosaic Law is entirely consistent with the doctrine of a fully inspired record, for the basic principles of moral law are unchangeable. Now, fellas, what do we find today to be an idea? Oh, if you don't think it's bad, go ahead. But these laws are unchangeable, and that's one thing. Right. And that's one thing. I didn't use this term a while ago, but that was one thing that was in my mind about the situation in San Francisco. The moral condition and so on. What did it do?
What's that term we use? Situation ethics? Is that what I'm thinking of? Relativity or anything, something on that,
yeah.
where what you do is based on what the mass is, what the average, or what's being done.
Right. That's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it.
See, what was the first term? And I forgot already. What was the first term I said?
Situation ethics.
Yeah. Okay. That's
Situation ethics. Okay. That'd be good to put out there in the margin. Situation ethics, followed by a real large question mark. Okay. Now then, for the basic principles of moral law are unchangeable and therefore the same in every age. The God who spoke at Sinai was the same God who wrote these principles and the very nature of men created in the divine image. Genesis 1:27. But the revelation at Sinai did several things which have been of inestimable value in the moral realm. Okay, we notice a division here. Whereas the moral illumination through traditions and conscience are often dim and distorted, the moral law at Sinai was not only given directly by God, who is the ultimate ground of all moral truth, but it was given to men in a permanent written record, fully inspired in all of its parts, and therefore inerrant in its original literary form. Well, fellas, just let me speak just one. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Or telling lies. Just look at what comes eventually. Eventually, they're going to be out. Now, I'm satisfied that there are a lot of things that I may not live to see come that I know about today. We may not see them come to the ultimate fulfillment or degree of degeneration or something like that, but it comes, fellas. It comes. Now, there's one area of our lives in which we are directly involved right today is this business of Christian education in seminary. And it ought to be a rule here in this school that every student go back and take the history of Christian education in the United States and see how it started, what was gotten into it that ruined it, and where those institutions are today, and what they teach today, and so on, who went away from the world. Every last student in this school ought to be a required subject that should be brought up to date on the history of Christian education here in America. In all of its forms, I mean seminaries or whatever it is, it ought to be taught. Why? Well, I know this may stagger some, But I've been knowing, well, let's see, 1978, all right, that's 38 years that I observed. And I'm going to be perfectly frank with you. The institution, well, someone has made this statement that a New Testament church usually is purest at the time of its organization than it ever is after. The same thing is true with institutions of life. They're probably hold to more tenaciously, more truth at the beginning than they do later on when they want to kind of become like the world and bring in these other things. And what happens? They degenerate. They degenerate. And so I've seen right nation, your system of education, everything, don't you say? Does that? All right. We come to the B section here. The revelation at Sinai joined together inseparably two things which historically have been have too often been sundered, namely religion and morality. What illustration do we have of that at this particular time? The Mosaic Code therefore struck at two dangerous errors. One, the ancient notion that a true religion can exist apart from morality. Yeah.
Morality is able to stand on its own base without any religious foundation.
All right.
Either way, in other words. Mm-hmm. Either one of the two can stand without the other.
Mm-hmm. And second, the more modern notion that morality is able to stand on its own base without any religious foundation. All right? The well-known failure of the nation of Israel to maintain this vital relation between religion and morals in their historical kingdom is no valid argument against the early date and Mosaic authorship of the record of the signed law, as critical scholars have sometimes asserted. For it is nothing new to find an appalling discrepancy between the laws of a nation and the everyday conduct of its citizens. As, for example, the lamentable situation in our own nation at this very hour, and how much more at this stage than it was when McLean wrote this. High moral laws by themselves are unfortunately no guarantee of right conduct. You have got to have some motivation, folks. And your religion.
He wrote this.
Yes. When?
59.
59.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, there's 11.
A lot of people consider the
50s
was pretty square.
Yeah, right.
You're like, mm-hmm. More or less kind of what they portray in Happy Days, but, you know, that they were pretty naive people then.
Yeah. Fellas, I don't know how in the name of sense we ever going to get through this course unless the point is, everything is so interesting and pertinent right now. Now, that's the point about truth. It's always in season.
Even so, though, maybe you better, like, you know, like the one section